Big time count. What B movie will be the ultimate champion? You might think they're crazy, might think they're diseases. But they watch all the shot to find the best of the beast. It's Stan, Jim, Jack, and Nick who watch till it's finished. But their love for these movies can be diminished. And maybe the film's plot has no rhyme or reason. But that's part of the charm, Owen Brad's of the season. The low budget film that it is most true. They find in the flick that's most boogaloo. Kung Fu, Electric Boogaloo. Boom, boom, Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu, Electric Boogaloo. Boom, boom, Electric Boogaloo.
Yogmala, Yogmala. Welcome back, my friends, to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. This is Season 10, Do You Believe in Magic? And I am your host, I am H-Dan Stanadu, and I am so happy to be with you to talk about Warlock 2, The Armageddon. And as usual, I am joined by my good friends, and my good friend that I am going to introduce first is Jack, Jack Hall.
Sup, suckers. I mean, I'm in a good mood, I have to admit, because I'm about to talk Boogaloo, and we're inching closer to announcing the films for next season, all things that make me happy.
It is true. We are about to do that. And the person that's going to join us on that journey is Nick Boxer.
Greetings and salutations. Wait, you said we were supposed to watch Warlock Armageddon? I just watched Armageddon.
That's okay.
And boy, do I have some Bruce Willis shit to talk about.
That movie's Boogaloo. Don't fool yourself.
It's got, all right. It's got it happening.
You can hear him right there. It's Jim. Jim Cotta.
Hey, Devil Boy. I'm ready for some Warlock the Armageddon or Warlock 2 or the movie that mysteriously disappeared from Prime as half of our hosts were trying to watch it.
Literally, it was on Prime for months. I watched it. The next day you guys went to go watch it, gone. I'm like, this is amazing.
It's like Amazon just said Armageddon it, and they did.
My theory is that they only had like two licenses to play it. We were the first and second person.
That seems sound. That seems like a sound theory.
They were just like, hey, we got two suckers. All right. High fives around the room and shut it down.
Like, this is going to hurt our brand if they find out stuff like Warlock is on here. We better get rid of it.
Yeah, because Warlock is going to hurt its brand.
People find out that Prime has some weird movies on it. All right. I'm ready to go. I look forward every episode to Nick's moment here.
Oh yeah. And Warlock, you know, I mean, should be fine.
You know, I as a teenager, I loved this movie, and as an adult, I've sort of discovered that I just really like action movies with girls in sundresses. Oh, yeah, what happened in this movie? Mm-hmm. Well, Warlock 2, don't let it fool you. They immediately throw any mythology established in the Steve Miner original film. So
Steve
continuity,
Miner? I didn't know he did the first.
He did the first one, yeah.
Well, and also I was wondering if it had any continuity, so thank you for clearing that up.
Absolutely none. The druids are the first time mentioned in the second film. Yes. So it turns out the druids are the protectors of the earth. They do so using five rune stones, gem-like stones that they carry around. 600 years ago, the ceremony to bring back Satan, I think. They're never really clear about anything. The Dark Master, whatever, is interrupted by some bad guys, you know, they fight the demon back, but the runes are lost except for one. Skip over 600 years, we are now in present day, and Julius Sands is reborn to collect the stones and resurrect his dark master. Now the druids have, you know, bred themselves into obscurity or something. There's like four of them left living in a small town somewhere in the Western United States.
Now in their defense, pretty much most of them are slaughtered in the five, like in the old times, are slaughtered in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, but I mean, my research in the druids sort of indicates they can fuck like bunnies.
Well known fact.
Yet,
if that was the case, that would be the only thing about druids this movie gets right. So,
so there's some teen drama bullshit happening in the Western United States, where the last two druids, a boy and a girl, are supposed to gather their forces to fight the evil. Only the girl's father is like not into it. He's sort of left the druid ways behind. And there is some weird, weird shit going on here. But none of it really matters to the last 5 minutes. So just enjoy the sundresses and the teen drama. Meanwhile, Julia Sands travels across the country doing some awesome gory effects as he collects the other four stones, or three stones, I guess it would be. And then there's a huge, wicked fight right at the end with lots of really bad CG, which is one of the reasons I really nominated this film. But now that I've seen Dungeons & Dragons, I'm sort of regretting that decision.
Well, Dungeons & Dragons did have more than 10 times the budget.
Yeah, and that's what happens. The good guys win, except, you know, there's a runestone at the end and a skeleton arm pops up out of the ground and grabs it right out of, like, Jason 6. Did that have any semblance of sense to describe this movie?
I think reasonably close. My first question off the top. What movie do you think of when I say Julian Sands? Warlock. Because for the life of me, I can't remember why I know him, like why I know him as a performer. Because even looking at his IMDb, I'm like, I've seen him in some of this stuff, but I don't actually remember him from the movies that I do know.
It's two movies this season that we have with him.
You know, I thought about this in the past, and I came to the conclusion that we know him as not Christopher Lambert. He's really, the confusion between the two actors for me exists on a level that it's not quite conscious, that I just know he's like the poor man's Christopher Lambert.
Let me see. Christopher Lambert, American, looks completely different, and is always Lambert's a hero.
Christopher Lambert's French.
Ah, okay. French, but sounds American. And Julian Sands is British, always plays a villain. And anyways.
Oh, yeah. Julius Sands, you put him in a Raiden hat in Mortals. Like,
What's the other movie we did that he's in?
The Casa Deadly Spell or whatever? Or the one with the one.
No, he's in the sequel, isn't he? He's not in the original.
Oh, isn't he?
Yeah, he's not. I didn't see him.
Yeah, oh, maybe he's
in. Okay. He's in the sequel, yeah.
That's probably my mistake for watching them both the same night.
See, so this does. I feel better that none of us actually know why we know Julian.
Well, no, but he's one of those actors that, like, he skirted on the edge of becoming a big star, but never crossed over to that level. Yeah. Like, he was in some bigger movies, you know, but never quite reached the level of, like, he seemed like he was about to become a known, not an A-list star, but a known Hollywood actor. And instead, he just never, despite appearances in movies like Arachnophobia and a few others that were, you know, pretty big
movies. I believe he was too big for Warlock 3. So,
or maybe true. That was not four. In Warlock 3.
Well. Yeah. Where do we want to start with this? Do you want to just go right to scoring?
Like, that's what I was going to suggest. Because we do
Jack
record
is way
these,
too excited for
we record these back to back, and we're gonna need some time to talk about the next film.
Well, I think we need to talk about all films.
I was so messed up through this whole movie because they make a point that it's like only every almost a millennia that millennium.
Well, it's almost 1,000 years.
Yeah, it's been 600 years.
When the lunar eclipse is 6 days away from the solar eclipse.
See,
now, I'm no astrophysicist, but I don't think that's possible.
It took a whole, like most of the movie for me to figure out that that's actually what they were trying, what they were going for, because they started talking about a solar eclipse originally, and then, but then we see this movie takes place over 6 days. By the way, you know that 6 day gap, and there's a full moon every day of those 6 days.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And then a solar eclipse.
So those, you know, when you have awesome warlocks and everything, this movie has I think this movie has the most magic of any movie this season. It probably is this or Cast a Deadly Spell that has like one of these two that has the most actual magic. And by the way, Charles Hallahan is in Cast a Deadly Spell and this. So there you go.
He's no Julius Sands.
I don't know. I can't tell them apart.
Oh man. So our warlock, he actually self-identifies as a witch and is immediately told he's a warlock. So he takes a piece of flesh from someone he's killed, and it gives him a map that's going to direct him to where these stones are, these ruined stones.
That he has to keep wet with blood, which was a great.
Yes. He has to keep feeding him blood.
I didn't realize that.
Well, why did you think he ripped the hitchhiker's hair off?
Because he's an asshole.
He used to refresh it with the blood.
No, he's just an asshole. Like
what I really dig about the map is that it's a map of the political boundaries of the United States. So all the states are marked off, and like the northern border with Canada. You know, like a demon would do, I guess.
Well, I thought demons were involved, heavily involved politically.
It would explain a lot about the 90s. he said the powers of the warlock just vary so broadly through the film.
He can just basically do whatever. I mean, he's super powerful.
It does feel like that. Like,
At least in the first one, to get powers, he had to kill an unbaptized child and drink the fat.
Well, he didn't do that this one. He just came he just came out of Joanna Pacula himself. He just like was birthed by her because she had one of the reason why he was able to do that is because she had one of the bloodstones or whatever the hell they're called. She had one of the six gems that he was trying to connect. Just, so there was a reason.
We're mentioning the birthing scene. Did anyone notice when he's screaming as a newborn child, you can see his fillings?
No, that's awesome. That's fantastic.
I thought that Joanna Pacula was the woman with the fashion show.
No, I think she was the woman that,
because it says that Joanna Pacula is Paula Dare, and she was the
really? Okay, well then it was the different woman who. Do you know Zach Galligan from Gremlins was in this? I mean,
I freaking love that he's in this for like 30 seconds.
I'm like, yeah. I missed it. I'm like, I only noticed that when I was doing research in the movie. I'm like, really?
He's he kills the woman when he comes over, and when he comes over, the doorbell goes off. He opens the door and it's Zach Gallagher.
Oh, that's him. Oh, yeah. Okay.
And he immediately dies. Like he immediately is killed.
Yeah. Because he needs his clothes. And luckily he didn't have a bike.
The line Julius Sands uses to steal his clothes is like black. I love that. The delivery was great on that.
Well, Julius Sands is. Like he's very comfortable in this role. Like he's, you know, he's not overly big, but he's also not, he's not taking it seriously in any way. Like it's, you know, like he's puts the right tone in this movie. Like the acting in this movie is interesting. He puts the right tone in. It has a lot of character actors who are really, really good. And then it has two young leads who don't know how to act at all. So, So and it's yeah, really.
I mean, the girl looks great in a sundress. So
she looks great
cares?
In a sundress, but the acting and it becomes in the scenes where they're with those veteran character actors that have been in so many movies. When they're in those scenes with them, it's really obvious how bad they are in comparison. So it's
yeah.
It's,
she's gone. That's Paula Marshall. She's gone on to a very successful TV career.
Yeah.
But she never went further in features. This is, and she has the same facial expression through half the movie. This kind of like I smelled something bad look, like her lip turned up, like she just stepped in something maybe. attractive young lady though, and yeah, she's been the girlfriend in like 87 different sitcoms since this. The girlfriend or wife.
A pretty Boogaloo trait is to wind up becoming the girlfriend or at least appearing in two episodes of a whole bunch of TV shows.
She's never the star, really. Is she? She's just guest shots, but she's been consistently making them forever.
Yeah.
The teenage boy looked familiar too. Did anyone look him up? Do we know if we've seen him anywhere?
I think he went on to become like a more of a producer director thing, like television director and stuff, if I remember correctly.
Maybe he just looks like the guy from Bill and Ted's or something.
Yeah, it's not what's his name? Something Alice Winters. Is that who you're thinking of?
Could be, or the second kid from Weird Science, one of those.
I think it's the second kid from Weird Science because he looks nothing like Alex Winters. Nothing. Like, he couldn't look less.
I was so confused by, well, I mean, of all the things in the plot, the druids are overly obsessed with what appears to be a Christian version of Armageddon. trying to reconcile those things through this film. Because the druids clearly aren't Christians, but they do hang around with a pastor.
Well, I think the pastor is one of the druids, but
he is. Yeah, because one of the things is the our hero gets bullied at school, and they call him Devil Boy. They say that his dad's a Satan worshiper. So he must be doing druid stuff around, like. It's kind of odd that people around seem to know that he's like got some alternate religious faith.
Dude, he owns a bookstore, small town Western United States. Come on, owning a bookstore is enough.
That's right. Well, you have the ability to read.
And in my opinion, in that town, it appears that if you do not go to church, that automatically makes you a Satan worshiper, since it appears that everybody else does go to church.
Well, yeah, but that's possible. Like 1993 in the southern states or wherever it is. Like, yeah, I mean,
it's well, I'm not saying Bible Belt. Possible. I'm saying that's a good reason why they would think these.
Yeah, fair enough. I our hero is he's. Turns out he's not just a druid. He's a druid warrior, which is the third worst type of D&D character.
Mm-hmm. So, and the female, the same thing. Also funny, a druid warrior.
She doesn't look druidish.
No, or warriorish. neither does he. Like,
not particularly. But
they could have been cast in the OC.
Like, he can make a baseball fly around like a 1970s Walt Disney movie.
That's special effect. They were proud of that, weren't they? They just kept using that one.
It reminded all of the moving things with their mind effects in this movie reminded me so much of Escape from Witch Mountain, which was made about 20 years before this. Yeah.
I just kept wanting to say, use the force, Kenny.
I had that moment of like, so is Kenny a Jedi? Like, is that, they seem to be moving stuff with his mind. He's floating.
He showed only two powers, the ability to move stuff with his mind and light stuff on fire.
No. He could talk to woodchucks.
Oh yeah. No, I forgot. He could talk to animals and trees. Understand trees. I like that. That's a good power to put in because you can say he's doing it and there's no special effects needed.
They should have put more powers like that in.
I like that later on the warlock just starts to fly. Well, could he fly the entire movie? Like,
why is he driving the car?
He drove from like New York to Chicago to somewhere in California, and he could fly.
Oh yeah, but I mean, it's established early on. He's not a flashy warlock.
He's not a problem-solving warlock either.
Well, if you're flying, where are you going to rip off the top of people's heads and scalp them?
Well, that's fair. Fair enough.
Yeah.
And no zombie cab drivers? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, he was relaxing in the back seat. It's not like he was driving. The dead person was driving. And I don't mean it was a zombie. I mean, it was actually just dead and the car was driving itself.
Well, because, I mean, that's what he did when he stole the General Lee as well.
Yeah, that wasn't just me then. That was the General Lee.
Like, it sure. I mean, obviously, it lacked the flag on top, but it certainly was a nice ripoff of the General Lee.
Did anyone understand the bit with the knife?
It was the General Lee without the racism.
Which bit about the knife? Well, the knife's like a lost MacGuffin because it's like. It's supposed to be the only way to kill the warlock is to stab him with his knife, and then they immediately lose the knife.
I never understood to tell the truth when they did kill him. What killed him? He seemed to survive everything. He survives everything they throw at him, and nothing. He's impossible, and then all of a sudden he's just dead.
Well, that's right. Yeah, the warlock brings the knife with him. You're right. Yeah, the knife shows up at the very end because the warlock has brought it with him. It's the only thing that can kill him. So he makes sure to drive it halfway across the country.
Yeah, that's logic. Oh, okay, so did the knife kill him at the end then? Like, I missed that again. It's like, I'm like, these little plot points, they didn't drive home to me.
Well, and the editing wasn't particularly good because like, they were kind of fighting, and then the next thing you know, like, the knife is suddenly in him.
Yeah.
Yeah, you hate when that happens.
Well, I guess you do want to take that knife with you because you wouldn't want to leave it into the hands of somebody else who ends up killing you. And better that you know where it is.
I don't know. It would be kind of, I mean, just leaving it at a truck stop might have been a better idea.
Yeah.
I mean, you're driving right past the Grand Canyon.
it's not like I'm suggesting you leave a note, leaving detailed instructions to go along with the knife.
Warlock killing knife, no touchy.
it's just the question that I have is that we know the warlock only had 6 days to complete everything before the mission failed, I guess. And so, like, when somebody asked, like when Kenny asked, like, why can't I just run away with the stones? I was kind of like, well, yeah, why can't you just run away with the
stones? Excellent question.
Yeah. you know, that motorcycle would have been put much better to use to running away than doing little magic tricks with it.
Well, it would have looked way better than the magic tricks.
Okay, so here's one of the things I don't get is he's supposed to be able to show up and just ask for the stone, and they're supposed to give it to him. And yet later on, he just kills everybody to get it. Like that is not consistent throughout.
No. The only guy he killed at the end was the old druid dude. And he had to ask. Sure, he was torturing him, but it was give me the stone. No, give me the stone.
He killed the dude at the carnival. He killed Joanna Pacular, but after she gave it to him. Just because he's an asshole.
Yeah. I mean, the dude in the carnival, you know, sold it to him, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
But he also said he said earlier he couldn't buy one either.
Like, yeah.
He made a specific point that he couldn't buy it.
I like that. I think he offered to sell it to him for $100 and then he gets all like, Julian Sands gets all mad, the warlock, and then he goes 75 then. And he's like, it's worth 1,000 times that. I'm like, so it's worth $100,000? This thing can bring back the devil. I think it would be worth significantly more than that.
Well, what's that number by inflation now?
Oh,
that,
yeah.
Closer to
Yeah. I forgot to go look up my inflation calendar for my season coming up. Thanks.
All right, are we good to go?
Yes.
All right.
We've done our due diligence and talked about the movie more than we wanted to.
In our search for the ultimate B movie, we rate each film in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category is called Schlock Appeal, and as always, we start with Stan.
Well, this one's interesting. I mean, it's got, you know, because I used to really like the first Warlock film. Like, I've seen that one 2 or 3 times, and I think much like Nick, it was just kind of like what got me interested in Julian Sands in that regard. But that being said, I never saw Warlock 2 until this moment, and it is quite a bit different than the first one, for sure. It's got its schlocky moments, and I think that there's parts where I was just like, whoa, is this like Halloween? Am I gonna like see Michael Myers show up at some point in this? But that would have been awesome if that had happened, but it didn't happen. Ultimately, I'm gonna go with a 6.
The title alone, I think, deserves a couple more points than that. I mean, Warlock, there, Armageddon. And I mean, this is a direct-to-DVD sort of nasty. Right during that time, direct-to-video nasty. You know, when they really just needed video tapes on the shelf and they didn't give a fuck. Like, oh, Warlock, that was a moderate hit. Well, we can make it cheap and throw it out there. There is something about just looking at that purple poster and Julia Sands being Julia Sands. The title is awesome. So I'm going to go with a 7, a little higher. Not a couple points higher, just 1, I think. Yeah.
Okay, so number one, $100 in 1993 would be $178 now. And number two, this was actually released in the theaters. It was a $3 million budget, but it made $3.9 million in box office.
What theater would play this crap?
Obviously, it made $3.9 million, so it was a profit. But I mean, $3.9 million must not have been in a lot of theaters. But yes, this was actually released before going to DVD. The third one was straight to video. This one, though, it did have a theatrical release. Does that give it a negative in the scoring? I can't remember anymore. It should. I think the schlock, the thing about this movie is it does have schlock throughout it to a degree, but in a lot of ways, we didn't really talk much about it, but that opening 5 minutes of like them in the past, like 600 years ago, 700 years ago, the druids, and they're just getting slaughtered by a bunch of people that aren't Julian Sands, I think. I can't remember. Who are those people? Why are they slaughtering everybody? Anyways.
I think that's from a whole different movie is what it felt like.
I think so. Like, and, like it opens up with
It'd play about 30 seconds and then freeze frame.
And then by the end, it wasn't even 30 seconds. It was like 2 seconds and then freeze frame.
Yeah, like, but it was like just a lot of deaths and different things. And a girl on a table for some reason, her eyes are all white. And
she was birthing was going to birth the warlock then.
She was going to, or not, I think she was birthing the satanic creature or whatever that was coming, not the warlock, but who knows? Like the point being that I think this is where the schlock peaks is like that first 5 minutes. I mean, it has a scroll to start though. It's not a scroll. It's just text on the screen. And then, this
wall
scene
of text. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then this, but, and I think, wasn't it like a moon and like clouds moving and then the text on top of it, which is just so schlocky. Like, so it peaks and it's really schlocky and then it never reaches that level again. So I am going to give it a 6.
All right. Yeah. I think the pitch of like a warlock who may or may not be working for Satan versus druids who may or may not be fighting against Satan is pretty solid. And I do love those images of that VHS box is awesome. You know, when he comes, all hell breaks loose. I think a 7's a fair number on this, though. More heart than budget, and as was mentioned, $3 million was the reported budget on this.
Well, with a $3 million budget, then like Julian Sands, absolutely, he was chewing up the scenery. He knew exactly what he was there for, and he was pulling that off. And you know, the rest of our character actors were doing a fine job, but like, yeah, like you like you said earlier, I mean, you had Chris Young and Paula Marshall, and they were much weaker than the rest of the cast. I think that they were wanting to be there. It just felt like oddly disconnected throughout for me. Being that it's a higher budget movie and that the special effects are just awful, I can only
5. It'd be, sorry, it'd I be missed 5. The number. 5.4 million. Sorry, 5.4 million by inflation. Just
Stan, I missed your number right at the end there.
Number three.
Ooh, that's a little rough.
Ooh, all right. I disagree all right. with him.
$3 million. I mean, during this era, did Julius Sands like get his dick out for that kind of money? Come on, this is a damn watchable movie. I remember loving this. I love it less now, but I mean, $3 million. You got some side boob. You got some silly special effects, and an awesome birthing scene. I love that. Hell, you know. Actually, just for the extra dog death, that's going to bump it up. I'm giving it a 7.
I think you're right on. I think, yes, okay, the baseball looked bad, as did like the flying scenes. Anything that looked like it had some sort of green screen type deal looked bad. But some of the other effects, some of the gore effects were really well, and some of the effects in the beginning. And it really is a horror movie. So it does have quite a few gore effects. And you mentioned the birthing scene. That looked awesome, especially where he okay, now that you've pointed out that you can see his fillings, that hurts it a little bit. But the fact that like there's like this blob and it turns into him. And honestly, I thought it was reminiscent of the similar scene of like kind of the blob of creatures in The Thing. It reminded me of that. And that's a high compliment. I thought that was really well done. Plus, I think the two leads, while they weren't a good actors, like, I don't think anybody phoned it in. I think everybody tried their best, but the two leads especially, they weren't very good at the time. But I think they gave a really sincere effort. So I have a 7 on this.
And they were likable, too.
Very likable.
I mean, they were wooden, but, I mean, we've all seen wooden performances, but you want to shoot these people. I was cheering for them entire movie. Like, they're going to get, like, this chemistry thing down or something. They didn't, but I wanted them to.
Yeah, I just wanted to shoot them.
A reveal that they were brother and sister wouldn't have been out of place with the amount of chemistry.
No, it really wouldn't. Though it would have made the sex scene even more uncomfortable than it really was already.
I don't know if that's possible. I will agree that the rotoscoping kind of effects were really rough, but all of the practical effects. Like all of the gore effects, the birth scene, and then there's several different kills in the movie that are all really graphic, and those practical effects they really brought it for those. But there's something about the movie that stuck with me, and at first it was oh, that was an interesting choice, and then it was funny that he repeated it, and then it just became hilarious to me that the director kept going back to this one specific shot that you almost never see in movies, where it's the one actor is in very close, very tight close up on one side of the screen, and on the other side of the screen is someone standing full figure away from them. The movie I know it from is The Outsiders. That's how The Outsiders is structured. This director, and he has a shot like 6 times during the movie. The next time you see it, you won't be able to unsee that shot. He approached this like, I'm going to direct like Francis Ford Coppola. That's what he did, and that's what he was doing in some of these, like as unmatched as some of the other things were in this movie. He really brought it. He really wanted it to be a thing. He wanted it to be a piece of art. So 9 for me. What the fuck moments?
Okay, well, this is there's some interesting stuff in this movie. One of the things that I noticed right off the bat is like, is this like the first movie that we've ever seen where the guy with the long hair who's a douchebag is actually the one who's like, oh, we love this guy. He's totally the right choice for her.
I you know what? I was wondering why she wasn't into him. I mean, he's He's got that long hair. He's also an actor. He's got that tight little tush. Are we still recording?
The big truck. Yep. Yep.
No, no, no. Continue. I'm almost there.
Nick brought it up. The dog getting mangled by the Satan baby is great. That's fine stuff.
There's Wasn't a couple... Satan baby? I was thinking as the Satan afterbirth.
Oh well,
I mean, he was born out of it, but I don't. If it was a baby, I'd want it some sort of like living tissue. It didn't look well. Yeah, I'm sorry, semantic argument.
I thought it was a placenta monster, but I guess we can all have our own interpretations.
I think we definitely can.
He had a nice truck that he abandoned partway through the movie.
And it's a good thing he did, let me tell you.
Yeah, it was convenient. I'm like, why did that happen? Oh, because the entire third act revolves around it. Okay. Maybe because he went to church. He showed up at church and Kenny didn't.
Well, so, I think he had to, but you know, but that's who knows. I liked the dog getting mangled by the Satan baby. I thought that worked for me. It was good looking stuff. There was a couple of points where I noticed that the actors were actually talking, but they were in shadow, but you couldn't hear anything coming out of their voice. So I'm thinking they had to do some work in there. I loved when they shoot Kenny. I loved the overall drama of that scene. It was just like, boom, boom. You know, everything slow motion. Like, we got close-ups on the shotgun. We got close-ups on his face. Like, everything was very serious and deep. So that was, I thought that was kind of funny. At one point, they're like, well, there's this spell that we can use. And it's just like, and what's his name is like, no, that's not going to work. And then he's like, oh, but we can try it. And so then they're poking at this leaf. And meanwhile, the warlock is out there squirting his black blood and flailing around. It's quite funny. But the question that I had about it is like, yes, okay, so the spell is supposed to work, but it stopped him for about 15 minutes. I'm thinking, this is how it works. I thought that they were thinking of this stopping him for a day. Why bother with the spell if it's only going to hinder him for about 50?
It's like having a voodoo doll and just giving him like a stub toe. Give him a slight limp.
And then I love the fact like when he has to go and chase down the stones. I mean, besides the fact that you got the fashion show, which is crazy, but the sideshow, which is absolutely batshit crazy, because it's just like, what, a sideshow? Are there sideshows still in existence? Because if so, why the hell haven't we gone to visit one? That's my biggest.
That's a good point.
This has got to be like the 15th movie we've done that has a sideshow in it.
Yeah, I know, and it's like a Boogaloo hallmark right there.
It is.
Having a sideshow in it.
Well, it's a chance to have a little person, which movies like this always want to find a way to put in.
Gotta have one.
Yes, and of course, you know, then they make modern art with the guy, and I love the. Oh, it's nice work, you know, with the eyeballs moving around and the tongue sticking out. That's funny. There's a newspaper that Kenny's dad is reading, and one of the ads is in there, and it says, "Is the end still near?" That's a cute little thing. But then, and then one of the last things that I noted is I love Kenny saying, "Well, in the old days, warriors would make love before heading off into battle." Yeah, you say that to everybody. Like, what a great way to land the chick in that case. But
I gotta keep that in mind. I gotta find a way to use that.
Maybe you can use it on the guy with the nice tight tushy. But
maybe I can. You know,
there's there's some things in here. Like, it's definitely a warlock movie, but there's some things that kind of stand out to me. So I'm going to give this one a 7.
Yeah, you went way high on this. To me, WTF is sort of just weird shit that happens that sort of stops the movie. And this movie didn't have that at all. I mean, there is weird shit out of the wazoo, but it was sort of all internally consistent. It is what you expect in a movie called Warlock 2, The Armageddon. You know, you expect those little side jokes on the newspaper. You expect some cheesy eyeball effect. You expect the almost Bruce Campbell, hey, baby, you know, the druids, they made love before they went to battle. Yeah, that's all. If those weren't there, that might have been a what the fuck, but they were all there. I can only give this a 3.
Yeah, I think, Nick, I lean more in your direction. Once again, I think you nailed it pretty good here. Like, this movie's fairly well made. I mean, especially for a movie with $3 million, so it doesn't have a ton of WTFs. I mean, sure, I don't know that I ever understood why it is that they had to kill the kids and bring them back to life to, you know, and why they had one guy go to slow down, you know, Julian Sands' character and run into him in an elevator. And you think, since he's the guy who's supposed to be able to battle him and slow him down, it would last more than it takes for the elevator to go one floor for him to die. But the elevator closes, comes back open, and it's just the blood all over the elevator. And Julian Sands walks out, and it's a really cool scene. It's so casually how he does it, but it's a little weird. But to me, the biggest WTF about this thing is just how mean-spirited this movie is. Like, it is jaded, mean-spirited. It's got a lot of religious symbols that that I think could have pissed a lot of people off watching it. And the gore is not, it's not like a movie like Friday the 13th where the gore is done for fun and to make you laugh. This gore is done to be, like, vicious. I think the movie's just kind of mean-spirited. That's kind of caught me off guard. It doesn't have that fun vibe. So, it helps for the defense, action part.
The first one was mean-spirited as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, maybe. But like you said, it has nothing to do with it. So... So anyways, I'm only going with the 3.
I think the tone is the weirdest part for me. So I do find the jumping back and forth of what Julian Sands is up to and the Jedi training montage of Kenny. I Kenny has to gets shot and then brought back, and then the girl Sam stabs herself.
Though she's already showing powers before that, which I didn't get.
But she knows that she doesn't get her full druid warrior powers unless she dies and is reborn. But it becomes this weird thing where they can just bring people back with no explanation why they don't bring everybody back. Like, are there only these two you can heal with this spell? Can you heal anyone with this spell? I was watching the new Star Wars movie, and my nephew says when one of the characters dies, well, can't they just heal each other forever?
Oh, good point.
Like, I guess. Like, I mean, it's kind of a boring movie if this happens, but sure. And I think that elevator scene it was so out over the top, because basically it just exploded the guy, like painted the inside of the elevator in blood. It you talk about that mean-spirited cynicism, and it does two of the things you never should do. Like, it kills a dog, and bullies and then kills a little person. You know, like, if you want any kind of redemption for your bad guy, like, any kind of, there's no light left in that character. Like, it's he's born from killing a dog. So I went with a 6 just because of the weird grinding of gears of tone. Memorable moments.
This one's a tough one for me, because it's like, I think I'll remember Julian Sands as the warlock character. And I think that I'll remember the kind of the glee with which he portrays the character. But I don't know that I'll remember much of anything else. Like, there's kind of just a mash of like druids and trees and like flying baseballs and that kind of thing. So it'll be interesting to see in a year or two what I like when you bring up Warlock 2 the Armageddon for us, and it'll be like, hey, we should do Warlock 2 the Armageddon. So I'm gonna go with a 3.
I'm going a little bit higher, and not much. I'm only going with a 5 because I think it's just the right amount of forgettable that you remember you enjoyed it. So a year after you saw it, you kind of went, oh, I saw that. I kind of liked it, but I don't remember anything specific about it. And then you watch it again. It's sort of a magic quotient for me. So, yeah, 5.
I got a 7 because of two scenes. It's that scene with in the blood, the elevator opening up. I mean, it's covered in blood and it's a bright red, and him casually walking out and just how cool he looked. And the birthing scene, like that birthing scene, like I said, a reminiscent of The Thing, one of my all time favorite movies. And what a great scene. I thought like that's going to stick with me. So I got a 7 on this.
I like the one of the first kills is Julian Sands and the fashion designer, and he takes her up to the roof, and then they float up into the air. So I guess he does fly early in the movie. They float up into the air in a scene like totally taken from Superman the movie.
Oh yeah,
and you know, and I thought at the time like Julian Sands is now my 5th favorite Superman. And then once she gives him the jewel, it's the only time that they actually obey the rules that they have established that she has to be freely given. He just lets her go, and she falls through a skylight, smashes into her own stage. It was so over the top, but like that the next time I watch Superman, I'm going to be thinking of Warlock, like, if he had just let her go. A whole different movie. I'm only going with a 5 though, because I do agree with Nick that I'm gonna come back to this movie in a couple of years and go, well, I remember Julian Sands being pretty good in that.
You know, cool. I would like to point out, since you said he's your 5th favorite Superman, that little known fact that they had to remove his mustache with CGI through this whole movie. Yeah, little known fact about Julian Sands and Warlock 2.
That's why his upper lip looks it looks as bad as the baseball floating in thin air. Crazy concept.
Well, sequels always get like tend to cut it in half for a sequel right off the bat. Yeah, I mean, though it doesn't hold much to do with the first one, of course, but I think when you talk about the idea of wanting to make a Satan returning, coming to Earth, whatever, however you feel about Satan, I think that the idea of druids, throwing in some kids, yeah, there's nothing too crazy about that. So I'm just going to give it a 4.
Yeah, once again, you go too high. Because, I mean, have druids ever been a good idea?
Probably.
But doesn't
no, I mean, I think we learned from Halloween 6 that no.
Shouldn't your score go the opposite direction? If druids are a bad idea, shouldn't your score go up?
No,
it's
not
WTS. It's crazy concept.
I know it's crazy concept.
I'm telling, basically,
this is a retelling of the first movie, ignoring everything the first movie did. If I didn't know this was it's not crazy at all, in my opinion. So, yeah, 3.
Is it the same plot, did you say, as the first movie? Like, I think I saw the first movie, but I don't remember it. It's so many years ago.
I think the good guys are chasing Julius Sands in the first one. They reverse the formula in the second one, but basically they don't meet up to the end, so who gives a damn?
All I know is that I think I cannot guarantee how many movies I've seen. And in fact, I can't even think of one where it's grab a bunch of stones and that brings back an evil person. But I'm pretty sure it was pretty close to that Cast a Deadly Spell was almost the exact same plot. You didn't try and tie it into the original. Like, just so little effort was put into this. So if you say that it's a sequel and it gets cut in half, that makes it from a 2 to a 1 for me. Like, it's just nothing crazy about this. It's just a movie, concept-wise.
Druids train two druid warriors to keep Satan at bay. Sounds like a Mad Lib. So I'm going to go with a 5.
You convinced me. I'm going to a 2. Still cut in half.
All right. That brings us to the end of the regular voting. Every season we have 6 secret modifiers. This film does get 2 of them. It gets a -1 for breaking the 95-minute mark. It is 98 minutes. But it gets +1 back for having a magical face-off. So that brings it to a grand total, well, less than grand total of 52.5 out of 100, putting it just ahead of Son of Kong. Wow.
All right, do some business so we can get to the next one.
All right, well, why don't you do some business and then we'll tell folks about our next movie.
All right. We are sponsored by WeTalkPodcasts.com, and so that's the website that has the Octagon, which is our ongoing tracking of our search for the Ultimate B-Movie. And they also have a Facebook and a Twitter, and you can also find us on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. And please subscribe and rate and review the podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Well, yeah. So I know that Jack is crazy excited right now because he really desperately wants to talk about our next movie. So Jack, tell everybody what our next movie is, because I know that you're so excited. You're like it's like palpable.
Well, it's called Furious from 1984, and it's called Furious from 1984. Like, I don't know what else you want me to say. It's on YouTube. There's a couple versions out there. Watch the one without the tracking problems. And I think it might be on Tubi as well, at least in some countries. So definitely you want to check this thing out. It is Boogaloo. There's no question about that. And then, of course, we also are doing Enter the Octagon next year, where we'll each submit a couple movies, and they'll compete against each other. And the movie that wins, that will determine the following season. So it's going to be a lot of fun next episode.
All right. See, I mean, you doing the work, man. Good job. Season 10, Do You Believe in Magic, wraps up next episode. It's hard to believe that we've watched 7 movies so far and. You know, basically an 8th on the way. But, you know, it's birthed the same as our warlock, you know, just splurted out and then it mangled a dog. Okay.
What the hell are you saying?
Hey, I watched Furious. That statement made as much sense as Furious.
Way more sense. Way more.
All right, let's wrap this thing and go home. So anyways, for Nick and for Jack and for Jim, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
All the signs are now in place.
Warlock is here.
The son of Satan has returned to fulfill his destiny.
What dost thou command?
There are 5 stones like the one she wears. You must possess them all.
He has 6 days to seek out the stones of power.
Who the hell are you?
I'm interested in this stone.
It's not for sale.
I never said anything about buying it.
And hold destruction.
Picasso. Definitely Picasso.
In the palm of his hand.
Tomorrow, everything is going to be destroyed.
I've come for the stone.
There's only one way to stop a warlock.
You mean like I have to fight?
I can't even fight the school bully.
A chosen few stand between him and his quest.
Who am I?
The second warrior.
Get this stone as far away as possible.
They must destroy him.
This is the best you can do!
Before he destroys creation.
Ride's over.
But to conquer the warlock.
Our betrayals, partners.
They must face the ultimate fear.
You don't look so tough now, do you, Blondie?
Julian Sands.
It is time.
I welcome my lord!
Warlock, the Armageddon.